President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this January the 28th, or if you are on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, you know it's already the morning of the 29th. So nice to have you with us. We've got a great show for you tonight. I've had the pleasure of interviewing tonight's guest several times over this month. In fact, this is his fourth appearance on Evident Footprints, not to mention a couple of extra shows that we did when we had these false flag events that we were reporting earlier in the month. And as I mentioned previously, we feel we played a role in thwarting those events. It doesn't mean we're out of the clear. We're dealing with some psychopaths at the top, and they have an agenda. With that, I want to let you know that tonight's guest still is an author, very prolific author. We are going to be discussing his book, Wrongly Blamed, and some new research that both he and I are uncovering in real time. This is going to be outlined in his new book, and we're actually co-writing a piece. Maybe it's a piece or two or three. Who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome to the show, Dr. Kazem Khalil.
Hey,
Dr. K.
I'm glad to be back.
I'm glad to have you back.
Yeah. You remember that time in the baseball court when the guy was complaining about all the security and how he couldn't have an umbrella? Mm-hmm. And you were saying, hey, that's because of those 19 Arabs and the, you know, box cutters and the knives and the passports that were illegal and the cash shown on the sock. And he goes, what? And you said, that's right. So that kind of brainwashing is kind of part of what we're talking about tonight, because nobody, who wants to be lied to and, you know, twisted around and stuff. So we'll try to get to the truth. But, you know, you brought up Wrongly Blamed, and in Wrongly Blamed we prove, and it's worthy to be proved, and it's worthy for you to prove it to yourself and to your friends, that there is absolutely no truth whatsoever to any kind of an Islamic attack on this country, either on September 11th or before. Mm-hmm. But in particular, we proved that the 10 of the 19 people who are accused, terrible thing to do, are living in other countries and were never in the United States, or were certainly not in the United States in September or in that whole year of 2001. And of course, if they were guilty, somebody would have went over and said, here, you come to our country. Nobody wants to do that, because by bringing them here, it would be proof, you know, just that much more proof of how fraudulent this whole thing is. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have O.J. Simpson still looking for his wife's murderer, and now he's doing that in prison.
Yeah.
So he's more likely to find him, actually.
Yeah, true. I said before that no matter what you people believe about the charade, that O.J. Simpson did not have the ability to do a execution, surgical assassination of that relatively rubbery and tough Goldman chap or the woman, and then pull the tongue through the, you know, through the larynx. He can't outdo it, okay? So, and that's become a sacred cow. And you and I and Miss Judy are the only ones that don't buy it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the reason I wanted to bring that up, because this whole thing about disinformation is very curious. And so is this thing about, you know, the people who died and the memorials, and every time I start talking to people who aren't quite there, and then you know, they demolition they can understand, government involvement they'll go to, the idea that the Israelis did it, they're always a little sheepish about. But when you get them thinking maybe there's something to, then they say, well, what about the passengers then? Even if you say, oh, it's a remote control plane or something, or you say there are no planes, but still, well, what about those passenger lists? This is where people really stumble, because they remember seeing the memorials and the pictures of Burlingame or Oganowski, you know, those were proposed pilots for planes that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Beamer, as you know.
Well, others, you know, Dr. Tate, here's a question. I wonder if anyone asked. I have a tendency to ask these questions, as you know.
Yeah, I know you do.
We have this story about the airplanes crashing into the buildings and killing all these people. How do they know these people died in the plane crash? How do they know that for certainty? Now, they say DNA amongst this molten steel that melted and basically burned for 3 months or more at the basement of the facility. We have no absolute proof. In fact, there's more proof that they're alive, isn't there, than they are dead.
You know what? That's a very good point. On the first place, you don't have any bodies in Shanksville. And you didn't have any on the putting green in the Pentagon, you know, the lawn there.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even have any in that hole, not one. And then, of course, the World Trade Center was a more difficult, wouldn't it be, to recover bodies, but you don't have any evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's a very good point. You have evidence of a guy that's alive, that's listed as being dead, and they had a funerary procedure for him, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was.
Well, you know, and then we have these statements that were made on the phone calls like, hi, Mom, this is your son, Mark Bingham. You do believe me, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that makes a heck of a lot of sense. Maybe it makes more sense that Beamer's imitator called the operator and didn't want to talk to his wife, but kept the operator on the phone for 13 minutes chit-chatting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a hijacking? Well, I mean, the whole hijacking is phony, but you're going to be on an air phone on an airliner during a hijacking for 13 minutes?
Yeah. And why 13? Well, we have, couldn't do it for 9 minutes. That would be a dead giveaway. 11 minutes, that would be a giveaway. 9/11. So
yeah.
They had to do it for 13 for the Illuminati families.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Now, and that raises the question, where is Beamer? Or does he even exist? We know someone by the name of Lisa Beamer exists, but we don't know if that
mm-hmm.
is real.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen her. We've seen Ellen Mariani. Excuse me. But we have not, until recently, started studying those lists to see if any of those individuals can be proven alive, except that you found one.
Well,
and we know for sure he would not have died, nor was he assassinated.
Yeah.
That much we can say, and that is who?
Well, actually, we found three. We found Daniel M. Lewin, not Daniel C. Lewin, as he's listed in the newspaper roles of the deceased. And we found Barbara Olson, who was the former wife of former U.S. Solicitor Ted Olson, and she was also a former anchor for CNN television.
Yeah.
I didn't initially find her. She was found in Europe, sneaking into Poland, and she was wearing a wig.
No doubt.
I understand it was a red wig. And that, she was toting a Vatican passport and a very large sum, millions of dollars worth of Italian lira.
Well, sure she was.
With the EU and all.
Yeah.
You know, using the euro, evidently she was laundering this money.
Yeah.
And now, she shows up here in the States, too.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. Well, there's no question that Barbara Olson is alive, and so is Daniel Lewin.
Mm-hmm. Now, Todd Beamer, I would say, is alive, too.
Oh, I would think so. There is, and Lisa Beamer does not make any sense. She speaks as if she has full knowledge of his whereabouts and that he's in a pleasant situation. There is no way she talks like a normal, aggrieved woman. There's just no way. And, you know, she folds right into an espionage line. So there's something suspicious about what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's something very suspicious about Ellen Mariani, because Mrs. Mariani said that she is the only relative of all crash victims that exists. Now, that's a very... Let's take her at her word on that, which she has said.
What was the crash?
Huh?
What was the crash?
Right, right, exactly. But let's just take her at her word that of the people listed as being crash victims, the people on lists, that she has ruled out everybody but her husband. We won't take her word on her husband, but we'll at least take her word on this very interesting subliminal statement that there are no other relatives that exist. For 265 names, there aren't any relatives. Everybody has relatives.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes you start to say, all right, there are names on those lists. Do those people even exist? This is a question you have to ask, right?
Yeah, that's the question I asked today, that we're assuming that these people exist. We certainly know Todd Beamer was given this glory for making the statement, "Let's roll."
Yeah, right.
And I think it was him, wasn't it? Was Todd?
Yes, of course, but I'm just being facetious about that. Don, I'm going to grab, carry on, I've got to grab some water.
Oh, sure.
I'll be right back in 2 seconds.
All right. The aspect of Lisa Beamer is kind of interesting as well, because she has remarried, and it's supposedly a secret. Now, I can understand some people not wanting the paparazzi chasing them around, wanting the extra publicity, or the unwanted publicity. But for some reason, she had to keep her marriage a secret. Everybody knows she's married. It seems that no one can determine who she's married other than we come up with the name Nelson.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting in respect to her aliases, too. She's got a whole bucket full of aliases.
So very suspicious.
So does Todd Beamer. So does Mark Lewin, and I presume that if we spent the time looking at every single person listed there, and this is not intended to inflame someone who actually had a loved one turn up missing, we just don't know those people. We don't know who they are.
Well, there aren't very many out of the 266 names.
Mm-hmm.
Only 11... apparently filed for the Compensation Act due to some very thorough research by Samatori, I guess is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. And of course, in LAX, because the claim was that a plane crashed, and they sent reporters to LAX, as you know, it's on video.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where are those relatives? Let's see some aggrieved relatives. There was nobody there. Now, that bolsters the statement that this is a phony list. You know, if there was a real plane crash,
mm-hmm.
the relatives would have gathered in the airport for answers. They always do.
Yes.
You know, always. So, and a lot of times, people will be there early awaiting their relatives.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody's going to be watching TV and sitting there. So, the question is, if some of these people were real, then they would have come forward if they're alive. And that's what happened to the 19 accused men from the Islamic countries. 10 of them were alive, so they came forward. 9 or 10, we know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
When they saw the news reports, oh, I've never been in Pennsylvania, I think it was Al Omari said. Another said, I don't even know anything about Hollywood, Florida, which is say I was down there. And I didn't fly. Another one said, I've never flown an airplane. How can you say I'm a pilot? You see
you
what
know,
I'm saying?
It's very easy. If any of them at any time came to the United States and they registered their passport and their photos with the State Department, and they could be tied to an address from that past visit, it's very easy for them to be set up, is it not?
Oh, yes. Well, their passport could be stolen. Their identity could be even an FBI agent, or in this case, Mossad agent, because the only ones we know for sure that had their hands in the blood actually were Mossad, not CIA, not FBI. Actually doing criminal acts on September the 11th were all non-American spies. In this case, the Israelis. Now, they can slip in, grab a passport, duplicate it, put the real one back. There's many things that can be done to falsify an identity. But what was interesting is that remember the men that were making a ruckus in the bars, in the striptease bars on September the 10th and 9th, getting drunk and claiming that they were pilots?
Mm-hmm.
Those were Israelis, masquerading as if they were Muslims. And they were planting this identity for Muhammad Atta, for Al-Omari, for Al-Midri, for Al-Shehri and all. They were planting those trails of evidence so that the FBI or somebody would get tied up in this idea of an Islamic attack. If there were legitimate FBI people that might really want to find the truth, they were derailed right away with the fake, with the fake Qurans. Well, they were real Qurans dropped off in a bar or put in the back seat of a car and all that.
Yeah,
as if the Quran has anything to do with it. Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. K, what do you think of the group that they arrested? And it seemed like there were seven or eight of them from the Akron, Canton area.
Oh, they're just pitiful innocents.
They claimed that they had stolen or got their hands on water treatment plants and power companies and those types of things. Now, we know for a fact that in this false flag event that there was a power company involved, the recent one we're talking, the one that we blew the whistle on.
Yes, right.
There was a power plant that was going to be taken.
That was down in Florida for sure, because that one was actually sabotaged to a degree.
Well, I'm speaking about another one.
Oh, all right.
This is in addition. This is this new event. Miami was still on the list, so
yeah.
That could be roundabout for saying Florida City, Florida,
right?
Because they like that duplicity.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a.
But what I'm saying here is that we know some of the cases actually were, we can say they were all real. This was a real event.
Oh, they were all real. They were all real, and they were thwarted by alert law enforcement. You don't know how many September 11th type attacks have been stopped because of exposing the Mossad agents, exposing the Zionist world order, exposing the fact that the media is culpable and is involved in confusing the people, exposing the art students. This has created a level of alertness in this country, and realizing that we don't have to worry about Muslim people, okay? And people are starting to focus on the Zionists and what they're doing to undermine the country. And even some of our police are on the alert for them. And that's what happened. As we know, in Irwin, Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
when Sheriff caught the two Zionist spies trying to take out a nuclear plant,
mm-hmm.
and also in the Whidbey Bay Naval Facility, they arrested those two guys. They had gunpowder residues, or they had explosive RDX, I think it was, and C4 residues on their clothes. That means they were transporting explosives, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess we have to give credit to the system that we have in the United States. Otherwise, we would have had the Alaska pipeline they were planning to take out. They attempted to do it, but they were caught. They attempted to blow up two or three different nuclear facilities.
Mm-hmm. It makes you wonder, you know, when BP took over that pipeline, and they ran it for a month or two, it seemed like, and then they shut it down, and they said the reason was that the pipe had rusted out in a certain area. I don't know.
Maybe they covered it up then.
Well, it may not be the case at all that that was the issue, but that they needed to sabotage it, and they closed it down just like they closed down the World Trade Center.
Well, that was in that same time.
Yeah.
Now, that's a very good piece of information, because these Mossad agents were arrested in October of 2001 with maps to the Alaska pipeline. So perhaps they were coordinating that at the same time and were coming back, and they weren't able to achieve that. Yeah.
Well, they could have turned on the HAARP machine, and they could have found the Alaska pipeline that way. I'd have taken them up there to go look for it.
Really? No, I know. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, this is why this disinformation subject is so interesting, because it's difficult, I think, to sort through this degree of disinfo. But I did find a very interesting one on Shanksville by one Michael Rossi, who we need to call. We need to call him and say, Mr. Rossi, how did you go about putting your disinfo or your video together? We'll be real nice and find out. And what were you doing with a picture of a crash site? See, what he did was he put together videos that are on YouTube where he shows a romantic list of purported passengers with, you know, a lot of shots with family and a lot of people who I can tell you couldn't be stewardesses or it couldn't be airplane pilots. Mm-hmm. And then he shows the superimposed plane smashing into the World Trade Center just to show how demonic those Muslims are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he does this for each of the planes. But then he gets to a curious one, and that's Shanksville, right? We know what the Shanksville ground looked like. It's more difficult with the World Trade Center. It's very dramatic. Lots of, you know, red and kerosene, and, you know, we assumed it was kerosene. But Shanksville's real easy because it's a mine pit, after all, right? A piece of land.
Yes.
So he shows all the purported Shanksville people, and then he shows this picture of a wreckage, a real airline wreckage with all sorts of aluminum and a tail part and wings and engines and body parts and, you know, and clothing and luggage strewn all over and blackened and charred, ground.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this fraud, Mr. Rossi, installed a photograph of a completely different area of the earth and an actual airline crash, and he wants us to believe that the Muslims did it. That's his entire goal. And he has published all of these tributes, all those tributes, most of those tributes to the airline pilots and the airline attendants are produced by this individual. Yeah.
Well, there are 3,000 people, or roughly 3,000 people on those victims list, just from 9/11 alone. And you and I both know that when we start investigating the one person, many, many come to the forefront. And it smacks of corruption and money laundering and conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not a theory. That's been
a fact.
Yeah.
That's a fact. Remember, we were talking to Mr. Murray, and he worked in the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
And he said there was a big asbestos problem there. It was obvious to everybody. Stuff just hanging there. And there was nothing they could do with that building. And everybody knows. All the New Yorkers know it was an absolute albatross, a hack of a building. You know, as far as, not so much structurally, although that had problems too, but in terms of its value.
Mm-hmm.
They could never turn a profit since it was born. That's more motive than, oh, they don't like us because of our, give me a break on that.
Well, you know, we may have mentioned this on past shows, but it's worth mentioning again. Every single terrorist, hit on this country, and we're speaking in more recent times, about the two hits to the basement of the World Trade Center an area where the financial offices, or where they had a intention, they had the intention to destroy the records. So they the whole office complex of those records.
Well, Murrah Building had all the records from Waco as well. And the proof that the government murdered those people, and particularly Clinton's involvement in assassinating those four ATF men that were going to come forward on the Clinton murders.
And I heard also the Agent Orange documents were quite possibly there.
I'm sure.
And then the Odd Bear, the Operation Paperclip papers were there too.
Yeah, so that was an absolute, internal act against the people. And of course, the records for the Ruby Ridge thing, which as you know, Randy Weaver succeeded over the government by proving, the government's own, cover up. His stuff was in there. And the investigation was going on through that brick building.
Now we have a lot of corruption going on via computers. We know that. I mean, these databases are replete with their aliases, and an indication as to who they're affiliated with, if nobody else, a whole bunch of other aliases. Orly Tates, Dr. Orly Tates, who's a DDS. Out of Southern California, filed some new briefs in her lawsuit requiring Barack Obama to produce evidence of citizenship.
Yeah.
And her case was taken off the docket at the Supreme Court. Now, they used to, and in some places, the docket is whatever they scribble on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
And they pick up their assignments almost like clockwork, the very morning of a case. So these people aren't mulling over the victim that they're going to be representing, or the plaintiff that they may be representing. They're following a pattern, and these databases and the way those documents are handled at the courts are very similar. They're compromised, is what I'm saying.
Oh yeah,
in a number of ways. It's obvious if she says her case was taken off the docket and then put back on again, the timing was suspicious.
Yeah.
Barack Obama, or Barack Satoru, whatever you want to call him, was meeting secretly with 8 of the 9 justices. Samuel Alito was the only one who did not attend that meeting.
I understand also from the Kenyon's own website that he called the Kenyon chief and said, "You're going to take care of that for me, aren't you?" That situation, and that's that would appear that this individual is far more double-handed than anybody realizes.
Mm-hmm.
And that pasty smile didn't impress me. I mean, I can't think of a greater fraud than faking who you are.
That's true. And we began by looking at the documents. We began studying the story. And the documents don't hold up. Immediately, it's obvious that they're phony.
Yeah.
And then, in looking at the associates, they may be related via, a particular CIA agent or Mossad agent. I see that.
Well, ultimately, it's the World Jewry, isn't it?
Yes.
As a Rockefeller, his involvement with Obama.
It's the same people. Now, we found out tonight via another show, too, that John D. Rockefeller was a Baptist. Isn't that enlightening?
Well, that's what somebody was trying to say.
You heard that.
Somehow
too.
John Rockefeller metamorphosized from 100% Jewish blood to, interesting. I don't know how they get that stuff up going, but they do.
Yeah, they keep spinning the pictures. Now, there's another series of interesting events, and this I brought up earlier in the week when we were discussing the issue of the falsified official documents. That how can it be official and falsified? Well, that's one of those oxymorons.
Yes.
What
I'm here.
Yes. What I would say about that whole read, if you want to use that term, when you consider that every time a document has come forth, it's been fraudulent.
Yeah.
What's true? What does that allude to at that point?
Well, it would have to be that the person's under cloak to hide his parentage because of his connection to the Rockefeller family or one of their subsidiaries or one of their or people above them. Because we know that the world jury has made it very categorically clear that their purpose is to confuse and to deceive and to manipulate the non Jewish masses, the goyim or whatever, and that they'll put their own people in power in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have proven, and others, that Bill Clinton is an example of one of their own. He came out of nowhere, but he is a illicit son of a Rockefeller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So
Hillary Clinton has a very, very interesting past, too.
Yes, she does. She's Jewish. From your research, and I think there's no doubt about that. But she's also been under cloak, hasn't she? Has she not?
Yes.
And so has, by the way, Michelle Obama.
Mm-hmm.
She's been cloaked as if she's. But nobody talks about what church she goes to because she's Jewish. But see, that was under cloak. That's we were the first to reveal that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about this or that. The point is, why are you disguising yourself? What's the big deal? You know, you have to go to a church, but you're somebody else. What's the deal?
Now people have selective amnesia. Have you noticed this?
Oh, I know they do. What are you talking about this for? They say, what difference does it make? You know?
They find out, they learn something like about Jerome Corsi's book or Philbert's lawsuit.
Yeah.
And they say, you see, the family witnessed the birth in Kenya. He's African American. Right away, they make that assumption.
Mm-hmm.
People, they're telling you he was born in Kenya. That's all they're telling you. At least that's that phase or that.
Yeah, that's the maximum variation that you can learn. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the variation of the story du jour.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so. People, when they hear something about Stanley and Dunham, just can't imagine. Oh no, that couldn't be. None of this.
Yeah.
You're not going to shatter my dream. You're not going to shatter the illusion. You're not going to wake me up.
We'll try it one more time. This individual, no one knows on record who the mother or father are, and no one knows who the grandparents are. But like the passenger list, some faux or surrogate parents have been put up. I can speak to you as a medical doctor that Mr. Obama is not a son of Stanley Dunham or Stanley Ann Dunham. It didn't happen. Okay? If there's a photograph of them together, she's a surrogate. That woman is not his mother. Period. I don't know whose mother is, but I know it's not her. I can also tell you that the individual who's supposed to be, and this is all based on Mr. Nikoloff's research, but I've reviewed it. He's asked me to review it, and I have done it as a physician and as a researcher. That the individual, and I'm speaking to you from bone structure and from what we see from legitimate photographs, as far as we know that it may be legitimate, that the individual registered as his father isn't his father. So that goes along with the theory that he is a plant by the world Jewish government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I came to the same conclusion during my research and after my research. And then more stories came out, too, to support all of the research. When I say most, as far as what was discussed in these these foul
And you have to be able to read through the lines. Just because he gets on Al Jazeera CIA or Al Arabiya CIA or Mossada,
mm-hmm.
doesn't, and just because somebody says they're going to close something that shouldn't have been opened,
mm-hmm.
you know, if a restaurant is condemned because it's got rats in it, does that mean it was a great thing that somebody closed it? You know?
You'd have to ask the rats.
Yeah. The rats certainly aren't going to be happy. That's right. That's right. So, you know, that's the same kind of playing field that has been created for the American people from, since, you know, Woodrow Wilson on. And apparently the American people are very important to somebody because they're always doing some kind of subterfuge and laying it on top of them. It's quite incredible.
Yeah. Now, you brought up the issue of disinformation, and I want to come back to that, if I may. I don't think that horse is as dead as it could be. So.
Mm-hmm. No.
I got to hear an interview this evening on RBN, and I think you got to hear it as well.
Yeah.
And we won't mention any names because the intention is not to embarrass the person, needlessly embarrass the person. And I'm speaking about Rick Adams. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
actually, it was something that occurred on Rick's show.
And a caller took issue with a host.
With a guest host.
Yeah.
Yeah. You and I likely saw what was going on.
Yeah.
You're listening, and then this lady called in, because we pretty much have a good handle on many of the facts, not all of them. However, this guest was just all over the place, making stuff up, agreeing with those who were disagreeing with her. I don't know if you noticed that. I sure did.
Yes, that was very obvious. I think the most important thing that I noticed was that the subject matter could have been interesting, but it was very convoluted. But this one caller said, listen, you know, I've been studying this intently, and she was trying to correct the guest host.
Mm-hmm.
Was that not your impression?
Yes.
And she was very upset, actually, at what she felt was disinformation, but she didn't put it in those terms.
Yeah. So we're seeing this left and right. They're attacking whole websites.
Here's what people can't comprehend. They go to a website, and they see what appears to be legitimate information. Okay?
Mm-hmm. So now, we have an echo here, Dr. K. I'm wondering if we have a call. I just got an echo. I hate to interrupt you there.
Yeah, I hear that echo, yeah.
Do we have a call, Beth? Or we just have an echo?
Hello. I can fix it.
Yes, who's speaking?
Oh, hi, Ron. Go ahead.
Hi, Ron. Yeah.
Before you start, Ron, I just want to add that this disinformation thing, as you know, Officer Ron, is a real dilemma. There's constant effort to put out enough facts to draw people away from really working towards a resolution. But go ahead, yeah.
I need to ask a couple of questions. The other day, something as this thing continues to unfold, certain things come to mind lately. You know, that's probably
mm-hmm.
true with most of us.
Yes.
Okay, first of all, Dawn, mailing address. Is, excuse me real quick, Paradise, California, what I have to send? Would that be correct?
You want to send something to the network? Yeah, they're in Paradise.
Okay, that's BBS.
BBS Radio.
Okay, fine. I'll address it to you. That's what we spoke of the other day. And
all
the case I have. Okay, but the reason I'm calling is that... thinking back to what I had mentioned before, I attempted, as you may remember, to obtain some of the newsreels relative to the interview of the guys that were working at the strip mine near Shanksville that allegedly saw the craft in the air trailing a plume of smoke and descending toward the earth. Now, their vantage point didn't permit them to see the crash. because they had no idea. And a friend of mine who was proffered out there that did find some metallic, what looked like airplane skin. Now, the policy of the radio and TV station that was there and took the footage of the interview before Shanksville long ever occurred, the new owners had bought the station, and in trimming budget costs, they just didn't get into providing any newsreels to the general public for sale. It had nothing to do with the actual event itself. It was just something across the board to keep expenses down to a minimum. And I know they had gotten rid of some people. There's a high turnover in some of those places, and there was some employees left who would come on board and so forth. But I'm going to get into the bearing materials in a moment, but did any of you happen to see a copy of a national magazine called Firefighter? I believe all the fire companies get them.
We've seen bits of pieces of those posted on the net, but go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, the cover of one of the issues, I can't remember where I saw it, showed the crash site at the Pentagon. And did you notice that a section of that Pentagon that they showed looked as if it had been sliced? There was a clear cleavage on the left part of one of the buildings, as if the building was built in sections, and it was so cleanly cut, something hitting that would not have done that.
Well, this is where Mr. Nikoloff interviewed a local person that was there, and he said it was there was a bomb that was exploded rather than a specific projectile. And this guy was actually there, and he was out taking a smoke. And so there are just as many people who say it was a bomb as who say it was a missile, and there's nobody who says it was a 767.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As far as airplanes go, the only picture I saw on the news was what looked like a gouge in the ground out there at the alleged site.
Now, are we talking Shanksville?
Correct. Now, what you're going to find in any wreckage, even if it hits a mountain, is some kind of debris.
Sure.
The dirt and the ground, there's a whole different set of rules there. It's called soil mechanics. And it's a whole different science. It's like crashing into a pillow almost, the stuff that gives. Now, if you're going to find anything at that site, you're going to find the engine bearings. Now, the bearings in those engines, and especially the F-15s and F-16s, I have some. I'm about 15 feet away from about 50 pounds of it. And that steel is unbelievable.
And it's powerful steel, isn't it?
Yeah, it's called BG-42, and it's made here in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And it's amongst the best steel in the world. Now, that steel will take all day running in turbines at 600 degrees plus and spurts up to about 900 without failure.
Yeah.
And if that's going to plop into the ground, I don't care what speed, you're going to find that bearings may be intact, maybe not, or at least pieces of them.
Right.
And when I saw that crash site, I didn't see a thing out there.
No, you're absolutely right. There were several news people from the major media that their representatives did get to that site, and I have their recordings, and I'm writing this up. They said, there's no plane parts. We're in the pit now, and of course, the neighbor there that was serving the workers at the scrap mine walked within 5 yards of the pit, and she said there's just some smoke and some charred material, you know, like dirt, but there's no plane and no plane parts, no wings. I mean, you can't get within 5 yards of a plane crash pit.
No, no.
You know? But the bottom line is, one of the officials in Shanksville said it well. He said, look, we know it's a legend, and I'm putting this in my new book, and we know it is, but it's kind of been good for Shanksville, and we're not saying we weren't told not to tell the truth, but what I am saying is we have been kind of indicated to that we shouldn't change it because it's, leave it the way it is.
Okay, let me ask one another question. The fellows that were interviewed, well, nobody took pictures of the so-called craft going to the air going down, and I understand it. They're supposed to be on the job working. You know, you take pictures, you get fired.
Right.
So I wondered who were those fellows that said they worked at the strip mine that claimed they actually saw a craft in the air descending, trailing a plume?
You have you're a great investigator, and I have an answer for you. You know who owns that mine and those workers and who owns that land?
I
David J. Rockefeller.
Oh. That answered the whole business.
Yeah, he owns that 75% of all that territory is owned, including the scrapyard, by Citibank. That's his bank.
Keep this in mind. Recently, I went back and looked at the original 9/11 videos from that night on NBC Nightly News. And one of the reporters said that they didn't find anything larger than a phone book. They also said that parts were scattered between 3 and 4 miles. Now, that's an awful long way to...
And I have to add to Don's point here, because there are two theories that come up. Remember we were talking about those, what we thought might be a slip by Rumsfeld? He's a little more shrewd than that. That's what we call dis slip.
Yeah,
you threw that missile thing out?
Mm-hmm.
What you have, according to Operation Northwoods, and what you probably have here, Ron, is strewn wreckage.
Well, that was what was found on about 8 to 10 miles pre-impact site by a fellow I know that owns that property out there. I don't know if he still has it or not. He may or may not.
I hope he does, because the most likely, because if you really analyze Shanksville...
I can ask him tomorrow. I know the guy personally real well.
It would be great, because if you really analyze Shanksville, you'll see a number of reports of bizarre things like, there's a rotor in the lake in the recess pond. 1,800 feet into the trees, even though the trees aren't damaged except right by the concussive site of the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
There was a 5,000-pound engine was just kind of in there. But, how did it get there? Well, it hit the ground and bounced over 1,800 yards is a third of a mile, after all.
That's over.
You know, I mean? 1,800 feet, excuse me.
Oh, sorry.
So... here's what we do know. We do know for sure that there was strewn wreckage at the Pentagon, uncharred, aluminum charred, one or two pieces, quite some distance from the building. We know for sure that there was strewn wreckage in New York, because the engine was sitting there under the canvas, under the scaffolding. And it was sitting there before the plane hit, apparently. What you're dealing with is that they could easily toss wreckage from an... Remember those three or four white planes that people think they saw, Learjet types? It's not a big deal to throw stuff out of a jet to drop it out. Or even if they didn't do that, it's possible to toss stuff on the ground and that type of thing. And it was done in New York City. We know that for sure. Because the engine is four blocks from the World Trade Center, and it was undusty. The engine sitting there on Murrah Street in Church. There's no dust on it whatsoever. It's clean, it's uncharred, it's not heating, it's not smoking. It's not from a 767, but it's an engine.
Mm-hmm.
It's under scaffolding. There's no crack on the cement. Now, if you eject an engine from 2,000 feet down to a piece of cement, oh, my God.
Yeah, there's way too many inconsistencies in a lot of this. And I know from checking out the details that the closest you could get to the actual event, you start from the center and work outwards, and that's the best way to do it. And as the minutes and hours and days evolve, stories change, memories get vague, people get threatened, leave town. It goes on and on.
There were some interesting photographs taken at the Pentagon, and I think we had mentioned these on another show, but they bear repeating, because this is done consistently. They did it with Barack Obama. They did it with the World Trade Center. They did it with the Murrah Building. They did it in the London bombings, and on and on.
Now, what's your opinion?
Let me finish, please.
Okay.
You have two agents carrying parts of a United Airlines plane. How do we know it's a United Airlines plane?
You don't.
Because it has the letter A. American Airlines. They're carrying these American Airlines parts, and when you take the parts that they have and superimpose them over representative photos, adjusting for scale and those types of things, the rivets are going in the wrong direction.
Yes, so, and what's more, it was a minuscule piece, and what's more, it was uncharred.
Yeah,
it was just pure aluminum with pure paint.
Yeah. Yes, it was basically, other than being torn into smaller pieces, it was undamaged.
Yeah.
And here, again, you had a whole plane doing the disappearing act that would make David Copperfield drool.
Yeah, and they keep talking about buildings swallowing planes and dirt swallowing planes, even though there's no history of that type of thing, except in the swamps and the Everglades when the value jet went way down. But that's, you know, it's a swamp.
I need to ask one other question, if I could, and then I'll leave. Yesterday or the day before yesterday, on Republic Media TV, which I think comes out of Pennsylvania, I watched what was supposed to be the first interview with, I guess, a Susan Lindar, the girl, the woman that was accused of being Iraqi intelligence, and they dropped the charges on her.
Yeah, she's given several interviews.
Oh, well, it was the first. This was advertised and touted as being the first interview. But the woman that I saw versus a photograph, this woman looks like she put on a good bit of weight. Did you happen to see that interview? That she actually named the rogue Mossad as the guys that went in and whacked the trade centers?
Really?
Yeah.
She actually
come out and said that. She says it wasn't our people. She had warned our people about that, and Bush and his guys turned a deaf ear to her, as if Bush was told to keep his mouth shut, or he knew, or...
Right. Now, that's true, but go ahead,
Now, she said what it was the rogue Mossad agents had previously been in there, and thermited the stuff so as to guarantee that building to come down on both of them.
Well, you know what? You've got to be right, because Frank Lowy, who was with Silverstein, is a big-time Israeli demolitions expert. And so is Netanyahu, who's a former commando and demolition man.
Well,
so you're dealing, the people who had their hands on that building are skilled in pulling buildings down.
We know
who is this person that said this, that they thermited it? Her name is Linda?
Susan Lindar. She was...
Susan Lindar. She worked for the government.
Right. She was furnishing information to our people and so forth, that she had a feeling that something was... She said, best my memory recalls, they knew that those towers were going to get hit, but they did not know when. And she was missed at the lack of precaution or anything.
Sounds like we were lost wrong, but I just will add that, but go ahead, Don, I forgot what I was going to add.
Well, he was saying she knew that they were going to get hit.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't do anything about it, probably.
Well, do you remember that look on Bush's face with the goat book on, upside down?
Yes.
I've always thought that was a look that, am I next? Instead of what, remember that guy from Massachusetts who said, oh, he's just, when they bent over in his ear, he said, mission well done. No, not the case. What we were seeing in Bush was fright. Now, that day, they broke through the code in Air Force One and said, you're next. Do you know that?
Yeah. I heard that, yeah.
Yes, they did. You toe our line, or you're next. Said it to the President of the United States. Wow.
Yeah, he was concerned. That's for certain.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. K, in our waning moments here, can you share with the listening audience, besides my website, directlightproductions.com, how they can go about getting your books and your wonderful herbs and some of the wonderful products?
I think you bring a good point. First of all, Officer Ron should protect himself. Anybody out there doing this work has to protect themselves. I use the oil of wild oregano. I use something, something called a Regaresp. I use those to protect myself. I will use oil of cumin on occasion, but my big favorite is the oil of wild oregano, which you know, the blue label material. It's just premium antidote. The ancient Greeks used it to destroy poison hemlock, to knock out snake bites, to knock out spider bites. It's great for brown recluse. It's great for sudden allergy. It's ideal for mold. It's ideal for mycotoxin. It's ideal for biological weapons.
Mm-hmm.
It's ideal, ideal, ideal. So those of you who are on the front lines, you really should be taking this stuff. As I mentioned, someone broke into the place I stay and the place I do my work. And they know because they were watching when I left. And then they got into the house but did not steal any of the obvious things. So it was some other purpose. And then the other thing is wrongly blamed is helpful because if you can't, totally benefit from it because you know a bit of what's in it, then you've got to give it to somebody else. Until people start realizing who the enemies, foreign and domestic, are, and until you realize that you are, the troops would never allow a colony to be taken over by a foreign army, even a colony like Panama or like Guam, right, or Puerto Rico. If a foreign army came and started surrounding Puerto Rico. But why did we let it happen here?
Yeah.
The greatest.
There's a substantial amount of evidence that shows that many of these people also worked for U.S. Naval Intelligence on some point.
Wow. Infiltrated.
Yeah. It's the cookie cutter at work. Overtime here.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of this going on, so, we want to stress that you've got to take care of yourself, number one, or you're not going to be able to take care of anything.
That's true.
And your health is important. So go to my website, directlightproductions.com. You'll see Dr. K's books there. And you can also go to his website, knowledgehousepublishers.com. And really peruse a large volume of books that he has written. I also want to take a moment, while Dr. K's on here, to acknowledge the work as we did this past Monday when I had Walter Burian scheduled for the show. Walter called in and couldn't make it. I got a response from a lot of people, and people were asking me what's the best way to send something to Walter. If you go to, and this is per his instructions, as it was laid out before I contacted people to help him, go to CAFR1.org. That's CAFR1.org. Or is it .com, I think? I can't even remember now.
I don't know.
.com. I think it's .com.
Yeah, I think it's .com, yeah.
Try.com, that doesn't work, try.org. Walter's situation may very well change. I know there are some people that are sending him some help. The problem is it takes some days for that to happen. And in the dire straits that he was in at the time these communiques came forward, it seemed like we wouldn't be hearing from him for a while.
Yeah.
So we want to thank Walter Burian for the work he's doing and thank all the people that took the effort, made the effort to help him out. That's the whole reason we did the show like we did on Monday, is just to get some help for Walter. And most of you out there would appreciate us doing the same thing for you when that
Absolutely.
Time came. So, Dr. K.
Hey, we did it again, my friend.
We did it again. We
and I'll see you in paradise, but not just California.
Yeah.
And Ron's doing some great work, isn't he? We're proud of Ron and what he's doing. Ron, send me an email, or you did send me one. One of these days, remind me. I'll get you my Shanksville analysis, preliminary one for my new book, and I will email that to you. So maybe in another week, send me another reminder email, and I'll send you that data. It's a 10, 15 pages, but it's well worth going over. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And everybody, keep up the good work. Share and share and share. And God bless you.
Well, thank you, Dr. K. And we've got a new month popping up around the corner. And you and I are going to be doing some work together. So
that's right.
Touch and
that's right.
We'll have you on some more in February.
Oh, okay. Take care. Bye now.
Okay. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Dr. Kazem Khalil, and he will be back with us again soon. In the meantime, I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all you, our listening audience, for tuning in. I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.